heritage is not really one of rugged pioneers, but of rather sophisticated ones. Josie Earp reported in Nome that most of the time she had to refuse invitations to parties. There was just too much to do. And if you go and look through our Fairbanks exhibit outside, though there's that charming table made with the caribou seat, really the articles from Fairbanks' early days are the cut glass punch bowl and the chasing and the silver chasing dish. If you read newspapers from the time, what do you come across but advertisements for feasts, ladies get your ball gowns, cut glass candy dishes. The Fairbanks and the Nome of the olden golden days were really a rather sophisticated city.
That was John Whitehead, an associate professor of history at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And I'm Karen Sedgo, director of public affairs, with this week's edition of University Focus. John Whitehead was the featured speaker at a special Golden Days lecture held at the museum on Tuesday. A captive audience listened to tales of Wyatt and Josie Earp's adventures in Alaska, from Southeast to Nome and Rampart. And if mention of pioneer days bring images of sod huts, then you're in for a surprise.
So these old pioneers up here in Alaska were always traveling somewhere else. So in the Golden Days, isolation was not really a factor up here in Alaska. People were going anywhere they wanted to. So part of our golden heritage is really a rather comfortable heritage. It wasn't Little House on the Prairie up here in Nome. You don't get any stories of Grandma and Grandpa in the sod house, and 20 years later, Mama was happy that running water finally came to Fairbanks and that there was finally an electrical light bulb. Old Mama only had to wait about 6 months, even if she was on old Captain Barnett's boat, before light bulbs and telephones and central heating were all up here in interior Alaska. So it wasn't a rugged, isolated time that those old pioneers had.
Yet, according to Whitehead, the early Alaskans had their worries.
Alaskans were concerned that people outside of the state thought they were kooks, that they didn't have the right impression of what Alaska was really about. People thought that Alaska was a land of ice and snow. They also thought it was a land just filled with semi-barbaric characters, rough men who came to get rich quick. Alaskans were worried that the outside had the wrong view of their women. Said one commentator, "They think that our women are just demoralized creatures clad in male attire, rushing from mining camp to mining camp." So Alaskans sat around worrying that people had the wrong idea about them. Also, Alaskans said they don't realize the great agricultural possibilities of our state. People don't think you can grow anything up here. Why, we've got to find some way to bring settlers up here who'll have nice little happy farms. So Alaskans worried and worried and worried that people on the outside thought that they were kooks. Well, what could you do about it? What could you do in 1905 to improve your image? Well, they thought, well, let's turn to public relations and the tourist industry and businessmen, and we'll put on a great world fair in Seattle, and all sorts of people can come out on package tours from Minneapolis, and then we'll have wonderful exhibits, and that'll show what the real Alaska is like. And then people won't think that we're kooks anymore. So various Alaskans went down to Seattle and persuaded some businessmen to put on a great world fair that would take place in Seattle in the summer of 1909. The business people in Seattle raised $1 million, and the state of Washington gave $1 million, which would be used to build the fairgrounds on what is now the campus of the University of Washington. So this would all be a great festival, and people would get the true idea of Alaska. In fact, so many people got excited that they wanted to have exhibits from the Yukon, and also from the Pacific Ocean. So the Alaskan World Fair quickly became the Alaska Yukon Pacific Exposition. So Alaskans were engaged in the Golden Days in a great effort of public relations.
The United States Congress gave the territory of Alaska $500,000 toward exhibits for that fair. All kinds of displays were produced, and nearly 4 million people visited the exposition the summer of 1909. Interestingly, Whitehead points out that the Alaska of 1981 is really much the same as it was 80 years ago.
And what are we worried about in 1981? The same thing we were worried about in 1905, our image. We still get upset that people think Alaska is a land of ice and snow. Only back in the spring, the governor of Alaska commissioned a public relations firm, just as he might have done in 1905, to find out what Alaska's image is. Well, some awfully upsetting statistics came back. Only 85% of the people surveyed in the lower 48 thought Alaska was a state. Another 4% thought it was still a territory, 5% thought it was a separate country, and 4% didn't know what it was at all. When asked how much of Alaska was covered all year by ice and snow, almost 90% of the people responded that at least a fourth of Alaska was covered by ice and snow all of the year. Half the people surveyed thought that at least half of Alaska was covered by ice and snow. In reality, the percentage of Alaska which is permanently under an ice cover is 5%. So the land of ice and snow image still exists. And what about the kooky image? When people in the lower 48 were asked, would you say people who choose to live in Alaska have the same basic attitudes and characteristics as people who live in the rest of the U.S., 53% of those people surveyed said Alaskans were different, that they weren't like other Americans. When asked why they were different, about a fourth of those people surveyed said they're different because they're more adventurous, daring, and self-reliant. Self-reliant in a state where 43% of the people are on the government payroll, well, that shows a little bit of an anomaly. Well, anyway, so the statistics still show that our image is still the thing that worries us the most.
John Whitehead has been teaching history at UAF since 1978. A new exhibit will be on display in Wood Center beginning Monday, July 27th. The exhibit features Voltaire, the famous 18th century French philosopher. Movies will be shown Tuesday night at 6:30 in Scheibel Hall. You Light Up My Life and See No Evil are featured. On Friday, July 31st, the Eskimo Indian Olympics get underway. And a series of management seminars are being sponsored by the Department of Conferences and Institutes through December. Call them at 479-7800 for more information. I'm Karen Sedgo, and this has been University Focus from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where education and research face tomorrow today.
University Focus is produced by the UAF Public Affairs Office at KUAC-FM.